join us for the 2010 Southeast Linux Fest as we once again celebrate Linux and open source software in the GNU/South. Due to the overwhelming response last year, this year's event will be bigger, better, and longer. SELF 2010 will take place Friday, June 11th through Sunday, June 13th at the Spartanburg Marriott at Renaissance Park in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Be there for UbuCon, Fedora Activity Day, BSDA certification, Drupal Camp, multiple parties featuring Dual Core as well as the guys from Mystery Science Theater 3000 as Riff Tracks, and an even more expansive group of superb speakers, sponsors, and exhibitors. SELF is free to attend, but hurry and register today to lock in the special discount room rate at the hotel. Register today at southeastlinuxfest.org.
You are listening to the Myth TV Cast. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Myth TV Cast. My name is Pat DeVilla. With me is Dan Fry.
How you doing, Pat?
How's it going, Dan? It's been too long.
I know it has, and we're actually here together in the studio together, right? So we've had some issues. We did an episode a little while ago, and it ended up Pat, you were having some connection problems with your internet. How's that going?
What happened was we were going to do a show, and I got an Amazon S3 account. Mm-hmm. After you recommended how great it was to do,
online backups,
you know, in the cloud and whatnot. And I've been wanting to do that for a really long time because I have, you know, files that, you know, I don't want to, you know, lose, you know, family photos, financial documents,
right,
and whatnot.
Right, sure.
Even my music collection, which, you know, I've invested, you know, literally probably thousands of dollars into it. I got, you know, quite a bit of music.
Exactly.
And so I got an S3 account and I did a backup. And it was like a 200 gig backup. And it took like the whole weekend to do that. What happened was it was almost done. And it looked like RCN throttled my connection. And I couldn't get hardly anything up.
Right.
Now, if you're doing VoIP, you need probably, I don't know, at least 100 kilobits up. I was getting like 1 kilobit up.
Oh, man, that sucks.
You know, my down was okay, but my upstream was completely hosed. And so we tried to do an interview with the developer from MythMoat, and I couldn't even connect to the Asterisk server.
Right.
I mean, it was completely dead. So we did the interview using Google Voice, and again, it bit us.
Yes, this time we did it right. We had everybody join together at the same, you know, onto the call. I hit the, if you use Google Voice, you might know this, you might not, but if you hit the 4, you can say it'll start recording your call, and then when you're done with it, you either hang up or you press 4 again. So we did that. We pressed 4. We heard your recording has started. You could hear it. I could hear it.
Yep.
And then after the interview was over with, we hit 4 again, and it said recording stopped. Everybody heard it stop.
Really,
you know,
cool. Yeah.
We talked for a little bit after that.
Get the file.
Exactly. So then we hang up the phone, and I'm like, it's not here. I'm like, what? Maybe it's processing, doing something or whatever. And it should. If you have Google Voice, you'll have like a recorded tab inside of there. And
nothing.
It should just bring you down an MP3 file of the whole recording. And I waited a day. I waited 2 days. Nothing showed up. I jumped on the forums. I there's supposedly one guy at Google who can get in there and restore this thing, and he must just not be monitoring this particular forum, because there are so many people in here who say,
same problem.
I recorded on this day. This is my phone number. These are the numbers that I don't put the full number in, but I just put like the last 4 digits in. This is the time it was. This is how long it was.
In the logs.
And he can go in there and pull it out. Well, since I've put it on there, there's been about 7 or 8 other people who have also put it on there, and these are like journalists. Like, there was this one French journalist on there, you know. Yeah, and he's like, I need this backup so I can write my article. You know, I mean, there's
nothing.
There's no response whatsoever. So
that stinks.
I hope that it's not lost. I talked to Tom. I told him what happened, and we're gonna try to schedule him again in a couple weeks here. So
it was a shame because it was a really good conversation.
It was. We had a really good conversation with him, and he does a lot of interesting things. So Tom, if you're listening, you know, we're gonna get you back on here. So
yeah, I think as a backup contingency plan, we're probably gonna get a Broad Voice account. So just so that, mm-hmm. you know, if I can't connect to the Tilt's Astros box, we can talk show.
Talk show, yeah, that's what it is. Yeah,
talk show. Yeah. Yeah. Well, just as a backup, we'll have that. So we'll do that.
Yep.
And I also had some issues with my cable modem. I was having problems where my upstream was slowing down. You know, I thought it was maybe RCN throttling me. I called them up. I gave the customer support person an earful.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, maybe it's your modem. He's like, do you have your own modem? I said, yeah. He goes, well, you know, the newer modems, they're a little different now. They do, you know, all sorts of data compression and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, you know, how about we send a technician and, you know, we'll see. He'll do some tests on the line, make sure everything's okay. And, you know, we'll just swap up the modem and see if it works. And, you know, the line was cool. Everything was fine. And he swapped the modem out, and I noticed a major big bump in speed.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm on the 10 gig down, 800 megabits up,
mm-hmm.
kilobits up. And is it kilobits or megabits? It's kilobits, huh?
Kilobits.
When you're talking in, yeah, it's kilobits.
No, it could be megabits.
Well, megabits is the bigger number, so it's 800 kilobits up.
Okay, yeah.
So I was averaging like 5. The fastest I ever got with that was maybe 6.
Mm-hmm.
But once he did the modem, I was getting speeds of like 8, 7.5, 8
right.
range. So
right.
It was noticeable bump in speed.
Well, that's good.
So that's what I'm doing. So I'm you know, RCN's got me by the you know what's, and I'm paying the extra $5 a month now. So, but it seems to be a little better. I'm having other issues with my hard SIP phone. I have a budge tone SIP phone, and I was playing around with the codecs, and for some reason I cannot connect now to the. I can connect to the Tilt ASRIC server, and I can make calls to other extensions, and other extensions can call me.
Mm-hmm.
But I try connecting into the conference room. And I cannot connect.
Really?
It's the weirdest thing. So, I don't know.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, the last show, I used my Nexus One using SIPDroid, and that worked out really well. It sounded really good. I was very happy with the results. But I got to get that fixed. So, until I get that fixed, you know, we're probably going to hold off on any interviews. So, I'm going to work on that. That's my next thing to see if I can get that. What I have worked on, though, is doing my upgrades.
Both of us, yep.
Yeah, to Mythbuntu 10.04, which is running MythTV 0.23 was release candidate, I believe.
At the time it was. But now, since then, the full 23 has been released, and they have, I believe they have pushed all that into the
dailies,
into the
right?
repo. Yep, the dailies have it pushed in.
So if you turn on once you do the upgrade and you turn on the dailies, you should get the full, you know, all the newer packages, and
right.
you'll get the full 23.
Right.
So I did the upgrade on my main box down here, and surprisingly, it went off with a complete hitch. Mm-hmm. There was zero problems. System came up, so all my recordings, nothing was flaky.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have any problems logging in to the MythWeb. The connections were working fine. It was perfect. I was
right.
happy as could be. Now, my front end, I was running, I was using a USB key on there to boot into it. Booting up was a little slow, but once I got it going, it seemed to be pretty good. But I noticed some flakiness even before doing the upgrade, where it started getting sluggish, there'd be a little more hangs. And I was thinking maybe that the USB key was starting to go, because when you get a USB key, mm-hmm. there's only so many times you could read and write to it.
Right.
And, I've updated packages a bunch of times on there, so maybe I got it to the point where...
Plus logs, unless you offloaded that to some type of like a temp file system,
you know,
in the RAM.
I didn't even bother doing any of that stuff. So I'm thinking that the USB key was starting to max out. So what I did was, you recommended getting a solid-state hard drive.
Right.
And I went and I got it. I got a 30 gig solid state hard drive, and I threw it in the Ion box. And what I did was, because I was going to a bigger hard drive, a new hard drive, I decided to do a clean install for the front end.
Mm-hmm.
And doing the front end install, the first time I went through it, it looks very different. They've redesigned the install process. There's newer things in there
since the last time you installed on the USB stick.
Yeah, since the last release, mm-hmm. and it's slightly different now. And one of the things I noticed was at the end, after it did the package install, before it actually finished everything up, it would go out and try to pull down updated packages inside the installer.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, but for some reason, it hung on that. Like it got up to like 90% and it just sat there. So I reset it and I restarted it. And when I got to that point again, when it looked like it was going to start doing the updates again, there was a button. It's a skip. I just hit skip.
Yeah.
And I got through it fine after that. And booting up with that solid state drive.
Oh, isn't it? It's so fast.
It's incredible.
It's like 5 seconds.
Six seconds.
That's
tops.
Booted into Mythbuntu, connected to the back end.
And the back end's up and running.
Yeah.
The menus are going.
Exactly.
Ready to go.
It is so fast. I'm going to eventually get a solid state drive, at least for my root partition, for all my machines going forward.
Yeah, I think for front ends, I think that's the way to go.
Even a desktop, if you put a spindle drive on, for like home or something like that, that you'd be fine. Plus you'd get that real snappiness real fast.
Oh, it's really nice. I mean, they're still a little on the pricey side, solid state drives.
Yeah, they'll come down though.
Oh yeah,
they will.
But they're so fast. Mm-hmm. It's so fast.
They're making these things in like terabyte, RAIDs and all that kind of stuff now. So
yeah, you can
those prices are gonna start coming down, I think.
Yeah, I think that's the future. Really, I think that's also the future with laptops too.
Long term storage, I think you're still gonna want a spindle media. I don't know that you're going to want...
For netbooks, those things are phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be the way to go.
I think you'd have, for quicker access, for quicker boot up and read-write access, because it's near instantaneous, you would want to go with the main partition, I think, on one of these solid-state drives, and then anything that's more longer-term, put it on the slower, spindle drive.
Yeah, and
just for sheer capacity, you know what I mean. You're gonna pay out the ass for a 2 terabyte solid
you don't
state
want to
drive.
Do that.
Yeah,
I think for a front end setup, it's really nice.
Yep.
And in fact, we got a question from our friend Gadget Guru.
Oh yeah.
And he was asking, should I invest in a solid state drive for my front ends or even the back end?
Mm-hmm.
And I think for front ends, if you really want a really fast, snappy system,
yep.
It's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to throw probably either Boxy on there too or XBMC because it's 30 gigs, so there's plenty of room for that. I think I'm gonna try setting that up in there. I'm probably leaning towards XBMC at this point.
That's funny that you mentioned that because I was on IRC one night on Oddcast Planet and Peter 64 was asking me if I had ever set that up and why he couldn't connect to get his recordings from his remote front end to his back end, and there was some. I did a little check and installed it. I saw exactly what he was seeing. If you install it by default, it can connect to it, but it can read certain files, but it can't actually read some of the content. It just kind of like dies on getting the content. It was a simple fix. Put the host name in your host file.
Okay.
That maps to that IP address. I guess if you have a DNS set up on your network, it probably would work.
Right.
But for some reason, the particular piece within the Myth plugin inside of XBMC, if you tries to do a DNS lookup because it has the machine name because that's what you tell it you're connecting
to.
So
it's hanging
on there.
I'll keep that in mind.
If you have multiple backends like I do, you can only see everything in the storage recording storage.
But you can only access
the ones that are on the front in there. So you'd have to kind of set it up to point to both of them. Now you might get some overlap and whatnot there. You might not know what is stored on where. But the Myth plugin isn't smart enough to go in and look at the Myth storage groups to say, okay, go get this file, but it's remote, so stream it from the remote system.
One other thing I noticed was when doing the front end setup was this time around it asked for a 4-digit like a PIN number.
Yeah.
And sure enough, I went into the back end setup and I saw where the PIN was. It wasn't set. So
that's something that's new that I haven't seen before.
I think that's as of 22 that's set up.
Mm-hmm.
So I set that up. And, going in the install, I put the PIN number, it connected. For some reason, it didn't default to the password. You got to physically go in. The three things you need to put in now. Before, it was just two. Before, it was just the IP address and the database password on your MySQL database on the back end.
Right.
Now you got to do that PIN number, too. So you got to put the IP address of the master back end. You need the 4-digit PIN number that you set in the back end, and then the password to the database. So once you set up those three, it connects. You get everything. What was really nice that I noticed that was different from the last time I did the front end only install was in Mythbuntu, it picked up all my settings for like a lot of the plugins. For instance,
did you name it? You named it all the same thing?
Yeah, everything was named the same
one. You know why that was? Because all those entries were still in the database.
Because
you blew away the front end.
The back end said, this is the front end settings.
Yes.
Yeah. Everything was there.
Yep.
The music was there.
Yep.
The movie time plugin, mm-hmm. everything yep. was there.
Right.
My weather settings were all there. Mm-hmm. Everything was there.
Yep.
It was awesome. I didn't have to do a damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to scan my music again. I didn't have to, the storage groups with the video. Everything mm-hmm. was there.
Yep.
All my metadata was there.
Yep.
It was perfect. I was like ecstatic. I'm like, wow. Yeah. I did this last night and I plugged it in. I'm like, holy crap. Everything's there. I don't have to do a damn thing. The only thing that I had to do was I had to, you have to manually, if you're going to do like an NF share client, mm-hmm. you have to install the port map package mm-hmm. and NFS Common. And then I put the entry in NCF stab.
You can select that right on the Mythbuntu Control Center.
Though. Yeah. Yeah. I did it myself because mm-hmm. that's how I'm used to doing it for every other machine on my home network. Mm-hmm. So I did that. Everything was accessible.
Right.
Everything was kosher. The only thing that still manually that I had to do since the first time I did the front end with the Ionbox was there's an ASound configuration file. You have to put some parameters in there. It's like six lines. Very mm-hmm. basic. Once I put that in there...
Yeah.
You get your audio through your HDMI. Not doing those lines in there, you wouldn't get any output mm-hmm. through HDMI. Now, upstairs where the front end is, I want to use HDMI. Mm-hmm. One cable for everything. It's nice. So I put that entry in. Everything works. Everything's kosher. It's cool. Mm-hmm. Everything's running nice.
Right.
And the bump in performance from the solid-state drive is it's noticeable.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Besides the boot up, it seems much more responsive.
Mm-hmm. That was one of the enhancements with this release of it, too, though.
Yes.
The menus and all that stuff are...
One of the things I used to notice before the upgrade was if you had the front end sitting and you like just left it there and went off to do something else and you turn the TV back on and you would hit menu, you go, there would be like a lag where maybe a few seconds and then it would go into like, I would say, go into my recordings menu and I hit the button mm-hmm. and it would just sit there for like 3, 4, 5 seconds.
Right, right.
And then it would go in. Now, yep. no. It goes right in.
Right.
I think that was a bug that they fixed. Mm-hmm.
But there was even with the menus in general, because sometimes there could have been a slight little lag. I noticed it a bit. Now I don't notice it at all. So
how was your upgrade experience?
I had a very good experience with it. I had a few minor issues that I did run into. The first one, well, when I started out doing this, I did my master back end and I did my front end pretty much at the same time. Because the front, I shut down my secondary back end so that it wasn't trying to do anything, any trying to write anything to the database or anything like that. So just shut that box off for the time being. And I just did the master back end and the front end first because I wanted to make sure it was going to go through cleanly. That still had everything on it so that I could wait. If I needed to get anything back, I could always pull everything off of it. So let's start with the master back end. All right. So I've talked about this machine before. It's got the RAID array in it. It's got a drive that's specifically for /var/lib/mythtv. And then it's got another drive in it that's just for its boot partition. Okay? And that's all the rest of the root stuff. All the logs go there. The home directory is there. All that stuff is on there. With this upgrade, this isn't MythTV specific, but this is more of a Lucid issue. They upgraded the Grub packages. It's now Grub 2, I believe, is now called Grub PC.
Right.
Okay. When it got to this point in the upgrade process, it wanted to swap out the old Grub configuration and install the new one. This failed because it could not determine where the existing Grub partition was, or the Grub directories and whatnot were. So I needed to select where to put it at, and I selected the wrong partition. I'm it's given me a list of everything. So I've got under S /dev/SD. I got SDA, I got SDC and SDF. I think I had inside of
there. So you put the wrong partition.
I selected SDA1, which I thought that's the boot partition. I figured put it on the boot. That's not what it wanted. It wanted it to be under in /SD in /SDA, not SDA1. What I found was that when I after I did everything else went fine, the upgrade went fine. Yeah, I had no issues.
Well, you didn't want to. You shouldn't turn the machine off if you don't have Grub set up correctly.
Right, and so
that's
needed
the bootloader. If you don't bootloader,
I needed to reboot. Then I got all the way through everything else. Everything was fine. I rebooted and I get to the right past the post screen and
it just sits there.
Nothing. I actually got the error.
I've had you know, issues in Linux. I think once where I had a grub partition was nuked by accident.
Yeah. As it was trying to load grub, I got this message. It said, error, colon, the symbol, grub underscore puts not found, and it put me at a grub rescue prompt. And at this point, I'm like, I've never seen this before. I didn't know what it was. So I went, I just put this into Google, and I started thinking. First things that popped up are lucid bugs that people were having with this. I think it's related to multiple drives, upgrading the Grub 2 to Grub PC packages. And it's not doing it cleanly. So there are bugs out there in Launchpad. I actually have a link to a lot of this stuff. If you go follow me on Buzz, on Google Buzz, you'll be able to see the whole write-up that I did about all this. It has a lot of this all in there, but it's really, really easy to fix. You get a live CD.
Live CD, you boot into it.
You boot into it. You got to set up a whole.
What do you do? A change root?
Yeah. You got to set up a whole change root environment. You go in and just rerun the grub update commands.
Point it to the right partition.
Point it to the right partition, yeah. And that's it.
That's exactly what I did when.
Yeah.
This is going back maybe a year and a half ago, I think. 2 years ago, I had this issue, and it sounds similar. But I didn't have separate drives the way you describe it.
Right, and I think that's what the issue was here, because I've upgraded now Lucid at least 5 times. Okay, between my personal desktop, which only has one drive in it, I have an old laptop that sits at my desk at work that has it only has one drive in it. Upgrades the Grub
flawless.
PC, so everything was all flawless.
I did 3 machines. I did the main MythBox. I did the family workstation, and I did my laptop. Mm-hmm. All 3 flawless.
Yeah.
Zero problems.
Right. So after I got this taken care of, thing came right up, booted up, set up to go, ready to start recording again, doing all this stuff. Now what I have noticed since then is that my PC HD 5500 card now has a lot of strange artifacting in it. Even after I've rerun the channel scanner on this box.
Maybe it's a driver related to the newer kernel.
It could be. It's also an older card, so maybe that card is just starting to go on me, too. Mm. So I don't know.
Did you look on their website to see if they had any?
I haven't. I haven't had a chance to go out and take a look at that.
Because that's a pretty popular card. A lot of people use that card.
Yeah, but I've had this card now for 4 or 5 years, so...
It's getting a little long in the tooth,
mm-hmm.
But it should still work. There's nothing wrong with it.
No. So now I upgraded then. At the same time I was doing this, I also had the update going for the front end. So I just more or less was VNC'd into both of these boxes while I was doing all of this. I didn't run into any issues with that either. I could see everything that was going on. This one went as easy as possible as well. Everything was fine. You know, the whole process was very, you know, relatively quick. I'd say it downloaded everything in about an hour, you know, hour or so. It ran through its update process. I'd say each box, all in all, was about an hour and a half, you know, I'd say
That sounds about right.
However, when this one booted up, it booted up to a low-res graphics screen. X couldn't load for some reason like that. What I equate this to was that I was running like a bleeding-edge NVIDIA driver on there, on that box, and that somehow got corrupted with what was being available in the repos. It was a 195 kernel, or it was 195 mod, you know, binary for the NVIDIA driver. This was a different 195 driver, and some of the stuff got corrupted. This, again, was pretty easy to fix. You know, I more or less went in and did a remove. Now, I couldn't actually get into an environment because I couldn't remote into this machine anymore because I couldn't load X, so I couldn't VNC into it to get like the device driver's applet up.
Right.
But you can go in and remove a lot of this stuff. You can look at what's invoted, DPKG minus L and then grep that for NVIDIA. You stop GDM.
Grep is a great command, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It's one of my favorite
command lines. Oh, yeah, I use it nonstop.
It's phenomenal. Unix command is great.
Yep. You want to remove, at that point, everything that's NVIDIA-related. Now, there were a couple packages that I couldn't remove. They were kind of meta packages anyway, so they didn't really bother anything. Once it was all said and done, I shut the machine down completely, booted it back up, made sure nothing was still resident or anything like that, killed GDM again because it was still failing anyway, and then you install NVIDIA Current. At least this is in Ubuntu, you know, Lucid. You install NVIDIA Current. It pulls down the appropriate packages that would be inside the device. It's not the device manager. The restricted drivers package, whatever that little applet is.
Little manager for your restricted drivers.
Yeah, yeah. So that once that was installed and I rebooted and everything was fine after that, that machine worked. That machine came right back up. Like you were saying, connected immediately to the back end. I didn't have to worry about setting anything up with the code because I think whenever that was installed, mine just defaulted to all zeros. So all my other front ends are all zeros anyway. So it just worked fine. I just booted right up, had access to everything again. So that was on a Saturday. Then the Sun.
That's what I did too. Late Saturday.
Yeah, it was late like Saturday night. I did those two, and then the next day, like before my kids got up, in the morning, I started off the front end down in the basement. You know, made sure it didn't connect to anything because the 22 version that was on the secondary back end could not connect to the 23
That's one of the things about MythTV. If you have if you upgrade like the your master back end, they all have to be on the same version, otherwise the database can't connect.
So I started off the upgrade for this. Now this is the box that has the HD PVR in it. It's got a Hopog HVR 1250, and I also have the PVR 150 in there that connects to an old SD box that's for recording my kids shows. I pretty much dedicate that one just to record the kids shows. I don't care if they're standard def; they don't understand what standard def.
It's cartoons.
High def is. Yeah, exactly. So I did. This one actually ran through completely fine, no issue whatsoever. Except for when I booted up and I ran into an audio issue.
What was the audio issue?
Well,
volume.
I
heard that issue in the
No, the problem that I have is that it's not running the latest version of ALSA. So I need ALSA version 1.0.23 in order to take advantage of audio over HDMI for the video card that I have. It's an MSI NVIDIA GeForce 210 card. So it's got an audio.
What do you need to do? Download the source and compile yourself.
I'm gonna have to end up doing that because I don't see them putting that in at least till the next version comes out anyway. Or I just stick with over the optical cable out. You know, but what it did was it loaded the sound HDA Intel driver, but there were no devices associated with it because it was running 1.0.21, and I needed to be upgraded to at least .23 in order to work. So what happened was that anytime that the sound load, if you look in ALSA Mixer, it always wanted to pick that sound card over the AV710, the Chaintech AV710 card that I have in there to handle all the audio. So it would never pick the right card. And nothing I could do would get it. If I try to open up the mixer would only show me the AV710 card. When I look at ALSA Mixer on the command line in the old NCurses, format and whatnot, it was always defaulting to the HDMI audio. So that I couldn't. So all I had to do then was blacklist the sound HDA Intel driver for the time being until I can get a newer version on there so it can load up and load the appropriate drivers for that hardware.
So you did a little hack just to force it.
Yeah, basically. I still have to look at something. I did notice that when I first started off that my music wouldn't play. It would just actually crash the front end. So I got to go and see if that's all fixed now. And I just haven't had a chance to get back to doing that. But otherwise, everything else works fine. The video looks so much better. The recordings off the HD PVR 1212 look so much better. Interacting with that thing is so much better too. It's a lot more quicker. It pulls the video off. It looks to be a lot more cleaner. The images themselves just seem to be a little bit more crisp too. And I know they did a bit of overwork in 23 for handling the H.264 recordings that come off of that device. This is now my main. I have this thing recording everything off the bat first. I did have an issue with audio, however, I thought was going to be an issue with the interaction between the HD PVR, but it turned out that for some reason the RCN boxes periodically mute the audio.
That's weird.
Yeah, and I was talking to Gadget Wisdom too on
Identica
on Twitter. Yeah, on Identica the other night. He was saying that he was away for the weekend and it happened to him too.
Made a recording was no sound.
So yeah, so you have a good clean crystal clear recording and no audio to go with it. So yet. You reboot the set top box and everything is fine after that.
Weird.
You don't even have to touch the Hopog box.
You still got the old box, right?
Yeah, I still got the old box.
I haven't seen that on the newer box.
Maybe I should see if I can
swap
get an upgrade.
It out, man.
The last time I talked to RCN though, they told me they no longer have any in stock, and so I would be on a waiting list to
really?
Get one. Yeah. So I don't know if that's true or not, but I've been going through the runaround with them too.
Yeah, you should get a Nord box.
Yeah.
Okay, well, talking about features of the new release,
yes.
I think that's a good segue to talk about the official release of Myth TV 023. And we can go through some of the features that are on there. Under the major changes is a new event system.
I'm still not quite sure what this is all about yet. I think that's
infrastructure on the back end, the way things communicate to each other.
Okay, and I mean, there's a lot you can do with it. I did go in and look at some of the menus for that, but I'm not quite sure what I'm gonna do with that yet.
Right. Rewritten and greatly expanded Python bindings. That's again for plugins, so that you can write Python stuff. Python's a great language. Mm-hmm. It's a fairly easy programming language for people to pick up, and it's just making it easier, the barrier to entry to do, you know, customize new plugins and whatnot in Myth, so that's a good thing. It says new audio with surround sound up mixer, so it sounds like they cleaned up some of the audio things.
Yeah, you're supposed to go in and switch if you had, let's see, if you had, what was it used to be called? You have to go in and change the up mixer to 5.1 if you had stereo in there beforehand, I believe.
Everything's working fine for me, so I'm not touching anything.
Okay, but you're not running like a surround sound system here either.
Actually, down here I am. I'm running optical out, and I'm going into a receiver.
You got 5.1 down here?
Well, I don't have my rear channels hooked up.
Okay,
I don't have.
So you wouldn't notice it anyway.
I wouldn't notice it. Yeah, but the front speakers sound fine.
Okay.
Let's see what else. With regards to audio, on my workstation here with Myth, Ubuntu in general, the last release with Karmic, there were issues where, like, I would play games and I would get, like, just distorted sound.
Oh, really?
It was pulse audio related. Seems everything's good now. I don't have any issues whatsoever. So it sounds like they finally
cleaned up the implementation
of pulse audio, which, you know, pulse audio is not one of my favorite things. And if I had my way...
You've bitched about it on more than one occasion.
They would get rid of it, but, you know, knock on wood, it seems to be working okay in the latest version of Ubuntu.
I wonder how it's doing in Fedora, because they're running Pulse too, right?
They've supposedly been okay the last release or two. Mm-hmm. So
I've heard people just go in and rip that out as the first thing that they do. So you know,
yeah. Well, we won't harp on that any more than we've had in the past. What else? The addition of the ArcLight theme. That's a nice looking theme.
I haven't looked at any of the other themes yet.
There's also this other one. I think it's Kids something.
Kids Play or Child's
it's
Play or something like that.
It's pretty goofy looking. It's like it's kind of cool for like a kids TV, whatever. It's like,
I'll have to go throw it on there.
Just check it out. It's pretty funky looking. Mm. It's nice looking for what it is, but I couldn't run that on my main boxes. You know, like I said, if that was like a child's TV, it would probably be nice. What else? The addition of Myth NetVision plugin, which is nice.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I played around with it. I got it set up down here. I haven't had a chance to set it upstairs, but it's similar to like the old web programming interfaces, which they got rid of a couple of releases ago. And you can go in and you could subscribe to certain shows, you know.
So long as you can get an RSS feed,
feeds,
right?
Yeah, they have a bunch of them in there that people have pre-programmed.
Does it do both video and audio, or is it just
I think
for
right
audio
now it's just right now it's just it's video actually.
Now, does it? What I like about Miro Bridge.
Well,
is,
let me just before you talk about Miro Bridge, let me just explain what I saw and what I liked about it and what I didn't like. There's a list of actual shows and feeds of different types of things. For instance. In 23, there's, there's Blip TV, there's Daily
YouTube
Motion, there's YouTube, there's some MTV stuff, there's movie trailer stuff, and then there's Twit, and there's Vimeo is the other one. Now, all of them with the exception of Twit, what it does is you go and select different things, and you select an item in the RSS feed. What it does is it fires up the Myth web browser interface, and it goes directly to that video and starts it up.
Okay.
So it's actually pretty nice. It streams. Mm-hmm. So for most of those, it streams. Now, for the Twit TV one feed that they have set up, it doesn't do that. Apparently, the Twit TV, they're using QuickTime, and it's not implemented, whatever, in the way they have it right now.
Huh.
But there's an option in there to say, okay, download the video. I did that. And it downloads the video into this one folder. You can't specify a different folder.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't see any interface in there to go and watch that video once it's downloaded.
Really?
So it
doesn't get put into your videos or anything?
Unless you point it to that directory where it puts it in. I think it's like in the home directory.
Mm.
And that's not the place where I won't put it.
Yeah, right
now they don't have a configuration file to change it so that you can point it to your videos directory. Logically, that's what you would want to do.
Right.
And then when you would go into
Even
your videos,
linking,
it would scan and you would see it.
Yeah.
It doesn't do that. So this is still considered alpha/beta software.
Yeah.
So for that one, it
Yeah, I haven't installed,
but it's not done.
I haven't installed, but I didn't get to really play with it yet that much. But that's what I was saying. That's what I was getting to. With the Miro Bridge, I mean, it just took my existing configuration. But now, at least with Mythbuntu, you can go right in the control center and set all this stuff up. But it puts it right into your recordings. You know what I mean? So anytime it creates its own channel, basically, nice. And it puts it right into your recordings. And that's what I was kind of hoping for with the MythNet Vision as well. That it maybe will get to that point somehow.
I think that's where they're going.
Which actually, that brings me to. I remembered something too. I did have to file a bug out there about the Miro Bridge on the Mythbuntu Control Center, because on my secondary backend, it pops up an error as soon as you go into it, saying that it pops up saying that it's disabling the plugin for some reason or another, but there's really no point. It seems like an erroneous message that's telling you that. So I did have to file a bug out there about that. Right. So.
Well, Mirror Bridge is nice because it takes the actual RSS feeds and the videos that you download.
Yep.
And it sticks it into like a dummy channel in your recordings.
Yep.
And you can watch it right there.
Yep.
It's real nice. So that's nice too. But going back to MythNet Vision, if you go to the wiki page on the MythTV wiki, they show where they're going with the plugins. For each feed, you have to build a custom Python grabber. And you can go that's going to be in the release of Myth 0.24. They're going to add the BBC iPlayer. They're going to add Hulu. Now, that's going to be a nice thing. Now, a lot of people, including myself, we have the Hulu desktop app set up, and we created a menu entry for it so that you can, from Myth, go into the menu item, and then it'll fire up the Hulu player.
Right.
On a desktop, you watch your videos, you hit exit, and it goes back into Myth. Well, it sounds like they're going to have it set up in Myth NetVision so that you don't need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You can just go in, set up the Hulu, turn it on, and you're able to select your Hulu videos, and it'll fire up the web browser.
Oh, that'll be cool.
And it'll play the video.
Right.
So it's a nice aggregator, you know, going and pulling some online content. Now, what else?
I wonder how that's going to work, because now that if you heard Hulu's going to start charging.
Good question.
You know, I don't know. Question. Plus, also, they were talking today about HTML5. It looks like they're trying it out, but they said it's not ready for them yet.
I'd be happy if they get away from Flash.
So would I.
Flash sucks.
Yeah.
You know. But if they go to H.264, which is what YouTube has, that's fine. That's offloaded. VDPA you can handle.
Exactly.
H.264. Mm-hmm. Okay, what else? For 24, they're also going to add support for, Revision 3, WB, so that you're able to get some of the shows if
that's
you miss a show.
Cool.
So it sounds like the development's active in there. And if you're a programmer, you know some Python, go check it out. Maybe you could write some grabbers for different feeds.
Mm-hmm.
And get it working. So that's exciting stuff. So I'm glad they're going in that direction. They're updating the web interface. I don't know if you remember the old web. Online TV content. Mm-hmm. You'd go in, and it was kind of old, like a tree structure.
Yeah, right.
They got rid of that, and this is where they're going. I like where they're going. It's not done. I figure by the next release, it should be pretty functional. Now, what they need to do, like I said, is if you don't get the online stuff streamed to you and you do a download, they need some kind of interface where
it
either throws it directly, configuration where you could say, stick it into my Myth video directory. I would be okay with that.
Sure, yeah.
As long, I'd be fine with that. Mm-hmm. Or put it into the recordings like Mirror Bridge does.
Right.
Either way, it would work for me. I'd be happy with that. So, but it looks nice. I'm glad they're working on it, and it's something to keep an eye on for the next release. So let's go back to some of the other features. Let me see. FireWire looks like they've added some support for some more cable boxes, including the Motorola new ones.
And with that, they've upgraded the channel-changing scripts to be able to do four-channel.
Yeah, which is a good thing.
Four-digit channels now, because remember, I think we were talking a while ago about this, that's why I ended up having to switch back to LIRC and doing I had to modify one of the scripts in there to allow for four-channel changers.
Right.
I think I'm still using that one, so I haven't had any issues with it, so I'll just kind of leave it at that for now. But
I'm glad they addressed it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Audio, ability to upmix stereo material to 5.1 and code as AC3. So that's good. They're doing more audio fixes. Let me see. Automatic detection of hardware-supported sample rates. Simplify audio settings. That's good. They're cleaning up audio stuff. That's nice. Video playback. They've updated FFmpeg to one of the more recent releases, which is good. FFmpeg's a great project,
Well, it handles all the Myth Archive stuff.
Yeah, it's really important. Add AV chapter support. Let me see. Speed up recording playback startup by loading the OSD menu more quickly. Removes PVR350 output support. Now, the old PVR350 card, which was the Hoppog analog card, mm-hmm. that was my first very build that I did with that card. Mm-hmm. That card had, besides an encoder for your recordings to do the MPEG-2 standard def, it had a decoder on there with a frame, like a frame output.
Oh, yeah?
You would plug that directly into there instead of going into your video card.
Oh, okay.
And that would pipe the TV out. That's how I had it set up.
Right.
It seems like that's being deprecated. The Hoppog cards, the 150, the 250, the 350, the encoders are still there. They still work. Everything's still there. You could use it with digital TV if you get a cable box and a blaster script to change your channels.
Right.
So, a lot of people still use those cards. I've gotten away from that personally, but it still works. It's still support, and that's good because a lot of people still use that. Let's see. Add support for 235:1 aspect ratio override. I guess certain recordings, whatnot, are in that aspect ratio.
That's more like the cinema wide or something like that, right?
Some of the movies are done like that. New and improved VDPAO rendering code. Fixed VDPAO high quality scaling. So it sounds like they got some improves for VDPAO. It says 15% faster software H.264 decoder. Mm-hmm. So if you're not doing VDPAO and you're doing it with the CPU, it sounds like they have improved a little bit. Let's see. Speed up the font loading in the OSD. That's
something I didn't even think about going in and looking at it, make sure all the profiles and whatnot were still up to date. Or still in the same state when before I did the upgrade for that.
Right. And then it looks like there's a lot of work going on in themes. They had the theme competition. And, definitely check out some of the newer themes. It's nice that they have stuff in there, too.
I never really saw any results from that. Is that still going on?
They posted it. Yeah, I think they had a couple of winners,
I missed that then.
And a whole bunch of other stuff. So you can go check out the MITTV Wiki, and you go to the release notes for 023. There's a lot of stuff that's being done in there. It looks like they're migrating more stuff to Qt 4. Mm-hmm. Myth game migrated. Nothing on Myth Music. I hope they get that because honestly, I think Myth Music is the weakest part. Mm-hmm. It's the weakest plugin out of all the other applications within there.
I was looking at some other things lately, like the Glubus stuff and whatnot. I would think they would be able to somehow incorporate some of that stuff into that, so you can allows you to flip through like album art and album covers and all that as you're flipping through your library. I don't know, maybe something that they got to be having something because they were originally talking about with 23 having an updated UI for Myth Music and. I think I saw somewhere that it might be pushed off to 24 or maybe even 25.
Yeah, that needs to be addressed, I think. I think that's the weakest thing right now. I mean, they're making good progress with Mirror Bridge and MythNet Vision for like online streaming content.
Right.
And downloading, RSS for video podcasts and whatnot, video casts. I'm glad they're going in that direction. And it's good that they're pushing ahead. It's nice that they did a release fairly recent 6 months ago.
I think they've changed that schedule now to that it's going to be on a fairly consistent 6 month schedule.
That's good that they do that. And I just hope they stabilize everything. But, I like what they're doing. It seems to be pretty positive and that. Other news, FCC, unfortunately, under the scrupulous prodding by the entertainment industry, have pushed in legislation that allows the cable and satellite companies to selectively shut off outputs on certain channels for certain things. So basically, this is broadcast flag 2.
Yes.
So say I'll give a real world example. You're watching, say, a movie channel like Showtime or HBO. Mm-hmm. They have a movie on there that's shown for the first time. They put a flag on there, and basically it either shuts off your output to your component connection or it downscales it to standard def quality when you record it.
Those bastards.
Yeah. I don't want to talk politics, but, both parties in the United States, I think there is a level of corruption. I won't say they're crooks, all of them, but, the system needs to change.
Yep.
All these big media companies have high-priced lawyers and lobbyists that go to Washington and basically wine and dine the politicians and prod them into pushing legislation that's
right
for their agenda,
right,
and their agenda is to lock people down, control their media, keep DRM.
They say that they're doing this because they want to be able to show you a movie the day that it comes out in the theaters on your television.
Yeah.
And I'm all for that. Don't get me wrong. I've got little kids. I can't really find the time. My wife works weird hours.
Exactly.
You know, so I can't find the time to go to the movies. I don't get to see things that I would like to see. I would pay, you know, what do you pay now? 10, 12 bucks or whatever. I would pay that to rent a movie on my television and watch it at home.
Yeah.
You know, but I can't, I mean, this is kind of absurd. There, you know, how many people still have TVs where they don't have, you know, they might have a high def TV, but they don't have an HDMI port on them.
Exactly.
You know, so the only thing that they're left with is component ports.
Right.
You know,
so what is the government going to do? They're going to buy new TVs that only have HDMI connections for everybody in the country?
I assume that they're going to force the TVs to only have HDMI ports.
Yeah,
on
that's
them,
where it's going.
You know?
That's where it's
but
going.
But you know what? I like HDMI and everything like that, but they can't get the specification down. The changes between things like 1.3 and 1.4.
3A.
Yeah, I mean there's a lot of, you know, devices and whatnot that are there that can't be upgraded over the internet. You can't get like the firmware for them and just up like my AVR. You know, if that's an older AVR, you know, I can't get a firmware, you know, update for it so that it can push the new HDMI version on it so that I can, you know, get the pass through to work correctly and it's not going to degrade my signal on me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean there's all kinds of stuff that needs to be done in place before they start going in and saying, oh, we're going to shut off these ports on people, you know?
Sadly, this type of legislation is also occurring in other countries. Mm-hmm. Ian Stauffenberg, who I know from the tech show, he's in South Africa, and he sent me an email, and basically they're doing the same kind of shenanigans in South Africa. I assume they're doing the same thing in Europe and Japan, as well as Canada and North America and where else.
Right.
You know, and it's kind of sad that they're going into this direction. Now, like, you know, we talked about people having, you know, older high-def TVs that, mm-hmm. that have component only. They don't have HDMI.
Right.
Well, they have the older HDMI that where this
exactly.
stuff isn't implemented,
mm-hmm.
and it really wouldn't work. So, you know, they have to push this, go full balls out with this. You would assume that it would have to be all the TVs that everybody has that only have HDMI, a certain version from that point going forward.
Mm-hmm.
So this is sad. You know, this is probably going to happen in the next 2 to 5 years, but mm-hmm. this is going to heat up, I think.
Right.
Now, there is a device called the HD Fury that some people use to get around this. And basically what it is it's a connection going from an HDMI output from a cable box or satellite box. And what it does, it takes that signal and it puts it into a component
mm-hmm.
and a separate audio channel so that you can – it's basically like a middle dongle that you plug your output from your cable box.
Right.
And your input of your capture device.
Okay.
But it's not a cheap device. It's like $200.
Is it really?
Yeah, mm-hmm. but sadly, that's probably where it's going to go in the next few years. We're probably going to have to buy those stupid things for our component recordings. It's sad, you know? And I think, you know, hopefully, you know, online content gets to the point where people can basically say, you know, F you to the cable and satellite companies.
Right.
And tell them where to put it, you know?
Right.
But I don't think it's quite there yet.
Nope.
And I don't think broadband saturation is high enough yet mm-hmm. and fast enough so that the majority of people can go that route.
Exactly.
You know, it's good that it's going in that direction, you know, but it's not quite there yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think it's going to become an issue going forward. And it's mm-hmm. sad that it's getting to this point. And again, this is basically a broadcast flag too.
Right.
You know, so we'll see how this goes. It's something to keep an eye on. And, you know, people like EFF, you know, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, mm-hmm. and the Open Rights Group in Britain, you know, these are organizations that fight this kind of bullshit,
mm-hmm.
you know, that big media is going hand in hand with government to shove down our
throats. Well, they just fought to get net neutrality enforced. And even though the legislation didn't really pass, they fought right back to get the FCC to go in and reclassify broadband. So it proves that they're working, you know. So it's coming up, broadband is going to hopefully be reclassified as a transport service. Then, you know, your AT&Ts and Comcast and whatnot can't dictate what you can and can't do on that.
Yeah.
So hopefully, you know, they're kind of leaning in the right direction with that kind of stuff. And the EFF and these other, you know, freedom-based, you know, organizations are all behind it and they're trying to get the support for it. So if you get a chance, go out, check out their sites, like Save the Internet and savetheinternet.org and, you know, and a number of other ones that are all out there.
You know, for people like me and you who are technically oriented, you know, we know about this nonsense.
Right.
But most people, they have no idea what's going on out there. And, you know, it's up to us and organizations, you know, to go and
exactly.
enlighten people and educate mm-hmm. them on what the hell this is and how it impacts them directly.
Right.
You know, the internet is pervasive, you know, it's become like a utility.
Exactly.
It's like the power. You
exactly.
know? It's like these silly three strike laws that they're enacted in Britain and France.
Oh, that's awful. Yeah.
Basically, they can shut off your internet if you're accused mm-hmm. of doing something wrong, illegal. Yep. Not convicted, accused.
And someone could link to your blog and put some type of, you know, nefarious content in that link. It's hidden by some tiny URL, and boom, you could be flagged right then there too. I mean, there's all kinds of absurd laws that they're trying to enforce.
The internet, a lot of people conduct so much business over it. Mm-hmm. It's just become so entwined in our lives that. You know, it would be like if someone crank calls the fire department three times,
mm-hmm.
They basically said, you're not allowed to use the phone ever again.
Right.
You know, that's ludicrous. Yeah. You know you're spamming people, so we're going to kill your power. You're not going to have any electricity running to your house anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this is what this is like. It's absolute insanity.
Well, they can go do that to the spammers.
Yeah, well, those guys we don't care about. Anywho, some other news. Some of our friends, you know, we talked about Gadget, mm-hmm. also our other friend, Patrick Archibald.
Yep.
They were on a podcast called HTP-Centric recently. They did give us a plug. Thank you, guys. We appreciate it. Huh. If you haven't heard it, you know, go check out this podcast. It's fairly new. They only have like three episodes out. They're on the last one, Pat and Gadget Guru, and basically they talked about Myth TV. Now, I went back and I listened to the first two episodes.
Mm-hmm.
These guys that are on the show, they are Windows hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're either running Windows Media, what is it? The
Media Center?
Media Center, or they're running Sage TV on Windows, it seems.
Okay.
It seems they have like two different, there's maybe 4 to 6 guys, and those mm-hmm. are like the two main groups what they do there. These guys are hardcore Windows people. And I have to be honest, I know not much about Media Center. I've never run it.
Yeah, I've never
Sage run TV. Either. I've never run, but I've read up about it.
Mm-hmm.
Sage TV also runs on Linux machines too. I'm mm-hmm. not familiar with the differences between the Windows versions
yeah.
and the Linux versions, but you know these guys are running it, and it was interesting listening to them.
Mm-hmm.
And from you know, I got into Myth TV after I got into Linux, you know, and I never went that home Windows home media route
mm-hmm.
ever.
Mm-hmm.
Now listening to them, it sounds like. There's this whole like third-party plugin applications, third-party applications that you need to run
mm-hmm.
to do certain things. In other words, the main application only lets you do certain things.
Right.
And then there's all these other third-party applications that you have to run on the side to do all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just interesting listening to them, and also listening to the third episode with Pat and Gadget Guru, and they were explaining, you know, how Myth is now. Supposedly, one of the guys on the show. Used to run Myth. He was having some stability issues and eventually went with Sage TV on Windows setup. And, you know, he was talking about lockups, things freezing every couple weeks. Mm. I'm thinking I've never had that issue.
Yeah, I haven't.
The worst thing that I've ever experienced in Myth is maybe the music player crashes the front end.
Mm.
And you just go in and you restart. You go into your media menu and hit. Start,
right. Yeah.
And it starts up again. All you could do, you know.
If anything, it would be like the, you know, trying to record over FireWire when it was trying to record a channel it couldn't record because it couldn't decode it. You know what I mean?
So yeah.
That's the kind of stuff that I ran into. Nothing like the lockups like he was talking about.
Yeah, but it's just interesting hearing these guys. And, mm-hmm. you know, these guys have hardly a clue about Linux and Myth TV in general.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad Pat and Gadget Guru talked to them. They gave them some, you know, a little bug in their ear, you know. Mm-hmm. People in the Windows world, they should check it out. Even if they're not running Myth TV,
mm-hmm.
even just to check out Linux in general on mm-hmm. a desktop, you know, running in a virtual machine.
Well, look at the adoption of like Boxy. You know, these Windows users running Boxy have switched over to take advantage of things like VDPAU.
Same thing
Linux,
with Xbox,
you know?
Media Center.
Yeah.
Same deal.
Yeah.
You know, so these guys are like hardcore Windows guys, and it's an interesting listen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, coming from as a Linux longtime Linux user, I recommend check it out. It's HTP-centric podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put a link so that you can go listen to the episode with Pat and Gadget Guru, as well as the two other episodes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just listening to these guys bitch, they're like, yeah, you know, I have my box set up, and I need to have a script so that it restarts at least every other day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, I leave my Myth box running.
I don't shut it off.
24/7
yeah.
for like months.
I got three of them running 24/7.
Months on end. I mean, yeah. I shut down my front ends, but my main box stays on.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are talking about, oh yeah, it gets crusty and the media the
No, I'm gonna check it out. I saw that they posted that they were on there. So
and then
I'm gonna
talking about file systems, and these guys have these massive like disk arrays and crazy stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, God, dude, they're using NTFS, man. NTFS is a piece of shit file system.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Yeah.
You know, I want to talk to some of those guys, either have them on here or we go on their show.
That'd be good.
Just to talk to them.
Yeah.
And talk about some of the issues that we've had and you know, stability. The other thing that I thought was surprising was apparently the PVR 1212 runs like crap on Windows.
Does it really?
Yeah, they have all sorts of stability issues.
What do they use to decode DH264 then?
Windows Media Center. Or Sage TV, too.
It does it natively?
So. Yeah.
Okay.
And the other thing I noticed is these guys talked about different on the second episode that I listened to on the ride home from work today. They were talking about taking, like, you know, ripping DVDs or just, you know, recordings that they have and video files and having to re-encode them so that they're front ends, you know, they have like these thin client front ends that run, you know, similar to what Sage TDV has.
Those are like the D-Link had extender. That's what it is. Like an extender.
Apparently, it doesn't support like native video file formats, and they have to like re-encode them to these proprietary video formats to watch them on the extenders.
Go open, man.
But one of the guys was like, I like native formats. When I do a rip, I just have the ISO with the full DVD structure, so I can just open it up and it's almost like playing a DVD.
Right.
And the one dude was very adamant about keeping native formats, and he didn't like extenders because of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking to myself, how can you like take a video file that's in a standard format like MPEG-2 or whatever?
Yeah.
Or MPEG-4 or whatever.
Yeah.
And put it into like a proprietary video codec, just so that you can watch it on an extent. It just seems like a lot of overhead.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens if you move away from that system?
Exactly.
You're screwed.
You got to redo it all over again to whatever you move to. Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't.
And Sage TV, I looked at like some of the Sage TV stuff. I tried to get a copy of that. I wanted to try it on a test box.
Mm-hmm.
They have a Linux version. I was interested. I sent them an email, see if they would send one.
Mm-hmm.
They never replied to me.
Right.
You know, I would have been willing to set it up on a box and just play around with it.
Right. Yeah.
Just to see what it's like running on a Linux system. Mm-hmm. I would never run it on it. I don't have any Windows running.
Yeah.
But just out of curiosity, just to see how it compares.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to hear from the other side what they're up to. Mm-hmm. You know, I recommend giving that a listen.
Yeah, I'm going to.
And it's interesting to see. And hopefully we can get a chance to talk to those guys. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd be interested in talking to them about their experiences. And,
right.
You know, what are their, you know, Pat and Guru talked about some you know, the pre misconceptions that they have about Linux in general.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
Oh, it's hard to deal with. Do you need command line? Blah, blah, blah.
Maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah, and even like the, you know, the whole, they made the point that, you know, the MIT-specific distros are really easy to set up. I mean, I got my front end up and running like in half an hour, 40 minutes.
Right, oh yeah. Fresh install. It's up and running.
Yep. You know, I didn't do much, you know. Turned it on, plugged in the three values, boom, it was done.
Exactly, yeah.
Nothing else.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, but I would like to talk to them at some point. And just to get you know, a different perspective on it, I think it would be enlightening for us and for them too.
Exactly. Yeah.
And
that'd be good. We should reach out to them and see if we can get them on the show.
One of the guys is from upstate New York. I think the other guy's from Florida. And it seems like they have the two main guys and some rotating co-hosts that they bring in and out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna send those guys an email. Maybe we can talk to them at some point.
Okay. It
should be fun.
Sounds good.
Yeah, we could bust their chops about Windows. These guys are hardcore Windows.
You got to run a virus scanner on your window on your media center. That's got to be
the other thing that they mentioned was about installing codec packs that makes the whole system unstable.
Oh God!
Give it a listen, man.
Yeah, I'm going to.
There's three episodes. The third one's the one with TV with Pat and Gadget Guru.
Okay, I'm going to take a look.
Check it.
I'm going to recommend one as well. I know you're not a big fan of anything on the Twit Network, but this guy named Scott Wilkinson does Home Theater Geek.
I haven't had a chance to listen to that.
Give it a listen. He's getting like the major players over the last like 30, 40 years on his show who have invented everything.
Is Leo on there?
No.
That's a good thing.
No. There's a pre-recorded thing.
I used to like Leo Laporte, going back so many years back when he was on Tech TV. I can't stand the podcast
He did one episode with him, but it was when they were live at CES, and that was it. But otherwise, he has the guy who invented the Pioneer Curro on there.
So it's interesting to hear.
Yeah, the last one I listened to, the guy was like a classically trained violinist, but he creates speakers. You know what I mean? He has like all the patents on how speakers are created.
He's a super audiophile.
Oh my God, super audiophile. One guy created the guy on who created the LCD projector. Basically, has the patents for anything that's projected onto a surface. He came up with this idea in 1971, but couldn't actually implement it because the technology didn't exist until like 1984.
That's incredible.
And it finally sold in like 80. I mean, the guy has had on the major players for everything, and it's just an hour long, usually an hour and 10 minutes, something like that. And if you are into like the real geekiness of it, you know, go ahead and check that out. I mean, he's got the guys who created THX, you know, on there. I mean, he's you name it, he has them on there, and he's got a lot of good guests on there.
I'll have to check it out.
So there's a lot of good stuff that they do.
If Leo's not on there, that's a good thing.
No, he's not. He's not. Like I said, it's just a little pre-recorded blip saying, you know, Home Theater Geek is brought to you by so-and-so this week or whatever. And that's about it, you know. But otherwise, it's just him. It's just him and his guests. I found it and I just said, oh, let me give it a listen and see. I'm really enjoying it. I went back and downloaded all the other 20 episodes.
Yeah, I used to listen to the This Week in Tech. It was like the general weekly roundup. I can't stand that show anymore. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, the last couple of years I've been listening to Buzz Out Loud.
Mm-hmm.
And the main guy from Buzz Out Loud, Tom Merritt, he's actually going over to Twit this week.
He's gonna be doing a morning show.
I'd be interested.
Like a daily morning show.
They're looking
like
to go up to like a 24-hour thing. Mm-hmm. No, thankfully Leo can't be on every show anymore. No offense, Leo. I like you as a person. You seem like a really nice guy. I've actually interviewed him.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't stand him on like certain shows.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't deal with them.
I like Twit for just general purpose tech news, you know.
I can't stand some of them. You know? This Week in Tech, I cannot stand. Mac Break Weekly.
I don't even listen to that one.
Or just awful.
The Windows. What's the Windows one?
Windows Weekly.
Yeah, I don't listen to that one either.
The only one that I listened to a little bit recently was This Week in Law. There's also a Google one too. I've been meaning to check that one out.
Yeah.
Those are the only ones. The Law one is actually pretty interesting sometimes. Mm-hmm. I've actually listened to that one live.
I like Security Now, but only every other episode when he's not doing his listener feedback, which I think is too much to do listener feedback every other episode.
I can't stand that show because it's like a 20-minute commercial.
And when he gets past all of the errata and, you know, the spin right stories
email.
Steve Gibson did a really good, you know, multi-part series on the very beginnings of like a computer, you know, all from very the very lowest level all the way on up, and it was a pretty good, it was probably about 4 or 5 episodes, and he goes, the last one was all about like multi-threaded processing and stuff like that, you know, so he did do a lot of good content on there. It's just surrounded by, you know, all the other stuff, you know, and he did do one all on vitamin D. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to listen to this to see what it's all about. I did not know the stuff that you really should need to know about vitamin D, especially for your kids. You know, so go back and listen to that one at least. You know, because you really kind of see, you know, how important it is, and that it's not really what they say it is. So,
another podcast recommendation I can make is the Retro Bits podcast. You know, I grew up as a kid on VIC-20, Commodore 64, and Amiga, and I had lots of friends that were running either, you know, Apple II, the Atari 400, 800, and the XL series, you know, great stuff that I grew up in, you know, when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. They did a series on the 8808 processors, which was a lot of those old original machines were all based on that. Mm-hmm. All of them used that chip.
Right.
You know, the Apples, the Commodores, the Ataris, mm-hmm. they all used that, and it was excellent.
Okay.
So check out the Retro Bit podcast. It's good stuff. So I think we're going to wrap it up for now. We're about an hour.
Yeah.
You got anything else?
Nope, I'm good.
We're good. You know, everybody, we apologize for the delay. Long space in between. Yeah. We did an episode and we lost it to
Google.
To the four winds and Google.
I do have one other thing to say. By the time you listen to this, they will have either won or lost, but go Flyers. They are on the brink of making, you know, breaking this record. You know, they were down 3-0 and they came back, they fought back tooth and nail, and they are now tied with the Boston Bruins, and tomorrow night they are going to play the Boston Bruins in Game 7 of this round of the playoffs. Then they are going to move on. Go Flyers.
I'm from New York and I'm not a Philadelphia fan, I have to be honest. you know, New York and Philly, that's a little bit of a rivalry between them.
Oh, yeah.
And but I'll give you this, you know, if Philadelphia wins the Stanley Cup, you know, when we go see the
Philly Union.
Yeah. When the Red Bulls go play Philly in the new stadium in October, I said, if the Flyers win the Stanley Cup, I'll go buy you cheesesteaks in Philly. We'll go pick your best favorite spot.
Sounds good.
Tony Luke's or wherever.
Sounds good.
I'll buy cheesesteaks.
Sounds good.
All right, Dale.
Yes, that is.
Okay. So everybody, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you soon.
Take care. Flyers. I'm